Blog Talk Radio.
I tell you,
there's a lady. There's a lady in the men's bathroom. Look at that. There is a woman in the men's gym right here in Baltimore.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Pro Wrestling Flashback. I am Sinbad, and of course, I am joined by my good friend Couture. How you doing, Couture?
You say another edition of Pro Wrestling Flashback, like we've been doing this every week.
Yeah. Well, I do understand that, and a lot has gone on the past couple of months. But yeah, we're recording another one. Maybe we'll take another 20-month break, and then we'll record another one. The funny thing is, it's because I don't know why I didn't suggest to record one. I was off work for like 6 weeks because I got my gallbladder taken out. And I was off work due to complications that happened before that with my pancreas and all that bullshit. And I sat and did nothing. I was so bored. And as you know, I have my wrestling toys, which, like, my biggest issue is, like, you know, I have all these toys. I love them. You know, I used to play with them as a kid. And, well, because I was off and I was so bored, Couture, I came up with the most, like, intricate fantasy booking with my toys. It was, like, the saddest thing I've ever done. And, like, every day I would have a different tournament and stuff, and, like, I would make up, like, makeshift tag teams with, like, Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart. And my wife, I have a wife, and I do this. My wife was like, yeah, we could call them the Heartbreakers. And I was like, how are we even married, you know? Like, how did someone marry me? And then suggest tag team names for my wacky wrestling figure tag team. So yeah, it's been an interesting couple of months, but I'm glad to be recording this right now, and we are going to be talking about a couple of my favorite cards ever. But before we get into that, how have you been? I know you do that show with that fat Mexican.
Yeah, I'm still tolerating him.
Oh, God.
Luckily, I have Craig there to
yes,
take my side when stuff gets stupid.
Yeah, that's Ed, I'm going to go on a little Ed rant real fast. Ed put this thing on Facebook the other day, and we're discussing people that have no idea who Ed is. Ed is this guy that does a show with Couture. They do a show every Friday, I think, called Over the Top Rope Radio. That's what's
Over
called,
the
right?
Top Radio.
Yeah, or whatever. And they... Ed in San Antonio is this guy who, he's in his 40s. I mean, he's always been a nice enough guy to me, but he really has no shame. Like, this man has zero shame about anything. He could do something extremely horrible, and then he'll immediately talk about it. Or he'll, he's gotten high with a couple of wrestlers. And, you know, it's one of those things like, oh, he got high with a wrestler. But he immediately will discuss it with everybody. Like, you know, like there's no shame in it. There's no secrecy to anything that Ed does. So he's just such an interesting guy. that's all I have to say about Ed.
Okay.
All right, so let's go ahead and let's get into this stuff. We always talk about WCW. Because we just haven't made it to the WWF yet. We haven't made it to the WWF stuff. And
you know how old we'll be when we get to WWF?
Oh, my gosh. I know.
I'd be dead.
God. I know. I'll be 30 in less than a month now. So I'm hoping I make it before I'm 40, at least. We'll see. But, yeah, we have the WCW Halloween Havoc 91. And then the Clash of the Champions from, like, November of 1991. So it's like the show a few weeks later.
Yeah.
And to kind of give an idea of what's going on around this time, all right, so Lex Luger turned heel back in the spring of, or is it spring or summer?
Summer when, you know, Flair left.
Flair left in the summer. So yeah, it was the summer of 1991. Flair had left for the WWF. And Lex Luger was a babyface that was kind of after Flair.
Yeah.
So they named the two number one contenders. And the two number one contenders were Lex Luger, who really realistically was the number one contender, and Barry Windham. And Barry Windham wasn't the number one contender at all. Like, he wasn't in a main event program.
He was just like a mid-card heel at the time.
Yeah, he was a mid-card heel feuding with, was it like the whole Yellow Dog thing, wasn't that around that time?
Yeah, it was when Brian Pillman, when he lost the Loser League Town match.
Yes, yes.
Came back to the Yellow Dog a couple of months.
Yes, it was gimmick, the Yellow Dog. They still do it in wrestling sometimes. It's an interesting thing. But, so Barry Windham is put in this match, and babyface Lex Luger versus heel Barry Windham. Well, what ends up happening is it's kind of a double turn in the match, because afterwards Barry Windham's considered a babyface, and Lex Luger turns heel and goes with Harley Race. And
yeah,
with
Harley Race and Mr. Hughes came down to ringside. And
yes, and Mr. Hughes at the time wasn't with Harley Race. He was with the York Foundation, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, he was with the York Foundation. So he left the York Foundation, like, and they never even explained that, what happened. And he was just with Harley Race and Lex Luger. So they had this, like, little heel stable. And it was cool because visually it looked intimidating. I remember as a kid, I thought it was awesome. Like, well, he has his own manager and a bodyguard.
Yeah, I like the bodyguard gimmick. I always liked the bodyguard gimmicks.
I thought it was
back
great.
Like Big Bubba Rogers back in the day.
Yes, yes.
Somebody like that.
Yes, it was tremendous. So Luger is the world champion, and people say what they want about his title reign. I thought it was great. I thought it was.
Yeah, I've always been a big fan of Lex Luger. I know he gets a bunch of shit, mostly for later on, like in his career and stuff. But I was always a big fan of his. I thought I never really thought he was that bad of a worker. Plus, he always had good guys to work with, so that helps.
Yes, he always had good. But I mean, there's certain wrestlers that can't be carried. No matter how good the person they wrestle, it doesn't matter. They can't be carried. And Luger, I thought held his own. Like, I liked him in a lot of matches. There was, like, in the twilight of Hulk Hogan's, I mean, it was not necessarily twilight, but late in his career, in the late 90s, they had some matches that were really good.
And yeah, he was like one of the top babyface in WCW when he beat him for the title on Nitro.
Yes, yes.
Remember that?
And that was what a great event that was. The Monday Nitro where Lex Luger beats Hogan. I mean, it was great how it all happened. The build up. It was a 3-hour Nitro when they went all 3 hours at the time, and it was just that whole show was great how it was built up. And so Luger in 1991 as the robe-wearing main event wrestler was awesome. And so he was the world champion. And the U.S. champion was Sting. Sting had won the U.S. title
in a tournament. And Luger was the champion, but he won the world title and couldn't hold two titles back then, so they had a tournament in the Omni in Atlanta in August, and he beat Steve Austin in the finals.
Yes, and it was, you know, so he's the United States champion going into Halloween Havoc. And the tag champs are Arn Anderson and Larry Zbyszko. And I was always a big fan of them as a team because this was pre-Dangerous Alliance. And Dangerous Alliance is one of those wrestling groups that was like the like such a perfect group of guys.
Yeah, it was kind of like that version of the Horsemen with Flair and Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson and Barry Windham.
Because everybody in the alliance either was someone or was going to be someone.
Yeah.
So it was like the whole group. I mean, it was a money group. And this was pre that time, but it was still Arn Anderson and Larry Zbyszko. Larry Zbyszko had left the AWA. He was a champ there for a while. And he went to WCW. And, you know, he was teaming with Arn Anderson, who Arn Anderson obviously had been around so much. He went to the WWF, came back. He was going to come back with Tully. Well, Tully had pissed dirty or he failed the drug test for cocaine, I believe, in WWF.
Yeah.
And WCW found out about that, so they didn't rehire him. So Arn is an island. You know, what could have been the Horsemen. You know, what could have, you know, they kind of did that a little bit, right?
Yeah, they instead of totally coming back, it was Ole Anderson with Arn, which didn't fit at the time because Ole was just too old.
He was well past his prime.
Yeah.
So then when Flair left, Arn really had nothing. He didn't have anything.
Yeah.
So
I think it's just been like teaming with Barry Windham on and off a little bit. Maybe.
Yes. Yeah. So it wasn't really. He was kind of a man without a mission. Like, you know, he was not in the main part of the cards. He was until he got that team with Larry. And I think they were a good team. They're called Enforcers. And
I thought they were a very good team. And Larry Zbyszko by himself, I'm sorry, bored the shit out of me. Put him with Arn Anderson. Watchable.
He's
Arn Anderson carry anybody in the team. Yeah.
And the thing is, Arn could team with anybody. You put Arn Anderson in the Great Khali of the team, it'd be a good team because Arn Anderson is that good of a tag team wrestler.
Yeah.
So we had them as a team, and they had won the tag titles.
There was the tournament. Remember, the Scott Steiner got injured. He tore his tricep or something, and he had the tournament and came down to the Enforcers against Rick Steiner, Bill Kazmaier.
Yes, and Bill Kazmaier was the self-proclaimed strongest man in the world at the time. And there was one storyline where Bill Kazmaier was injured, like, going into that match because he was doing some, like, it was like an episode of Worldwide or Pro where he's doing some free weights.
Oh, no, he was on the Clash of the Champions card early in the night where they won the title. He was doing the test of strength. He had, like some kind of railroad bar or something that he was bending over his neck or something like that.
Yes, which made no sense. Why would you do that on the night you had a title match?
Yeah, and the Enforcers ran into the ring. They picked up one of those, just a barbell plate and just rammed it into his ribs.
Yes. So they won the tag title. And Steve Austin had come in from from Dallas. He had a feud with Chris Adams, opened a lot of eyes, and wound up in WCW. And he was really young into his career, you know, just a year or two in by the time he made it to WCW. And right when he got there, he had a valet, I think her name was Veronica, and she only lasted a couple of weeks. And then eventually the valet was his real-life wife,
Jeannie, Lady Blossom.
Lady Blossom, and it was like maybe a few weeks into his WCW run, he had a match with beautiful Bobby Eaton, and he won the TV title.
I think it was only like 2 weeks.
Yeah, it was very, very.
It wasn't too far after that Super Brawl where Bobby won the title.
Yeah.
In fact, I think Bobby actually lost the title before. He lost the title before. I can't remember. He was going into the match with Flair of one of the clashes in a 2 out of 3 fall match, and they still built him as a TV champion, but he had lost it like 2 or 3 weeks before to Austin. So,
yeah,
and of course they had a vignette for Steve Austin on that Clash of the Champions before he won, when he didn't have the title, and they showed him opening his robe, and he had the TV title belt on. So, kind of a spoiler.
It was like the way that all, you know, worked out. Like, I just thought it was such a funny thing, you know. I just thought it was such a, I don't know, like, I've always thought that, you know.
I hate when they do, like, the title changes before they actually do the title changes. You know what I'm trying to say?
No, because they would record the stuff ahead of time. Because they were trying to save on costs, which I understand that, but they would record way out of,
thank God
you know,
internet,
like,
wasn't around back then. Shit.
Yeah, but you only had Dave Meltzer and the Torch and all those guys.
All I had was Pro Wrestling Illustrated. Doesn't make it. I didn't even know what Dirt Sheet was.
Yeah, well, yeah, at the time. But it was, you know, the... All right. WCW, one thing that I can say about them is them, like the NWA, WCW, well, because I need to go back to the whole Steve Austin winning the title straight away from Bobby. They've always been a heel-friendly company where
yeah.
the babyfaces will get the title, but they won't have it for a long time. So even, you know, it didn't matter who won it, they would lose it pretty quickly, almost always. And they kind of even did that in the late 90s, too, in a way. They always would have a heel on top. Because Hogan mostly
yeah.
had the belt. Luger won it, but then Hogan won it right back. And Sting won it, and then, you know, I guess Goldberg was, you know, he had the title for a while, like, you know, but it wasn't that long.
Yeah.
He didn't have the title, you know, more than a year. He only had it for, like, 6 months, I think.
Yeah, that's right.
So, like, it was mainly just heels. So, they had a tournament for the WCW light heavyweight title. And this Halloween Havoc in October of 91, they were going to crown the champion. And they necessarily didn't think this through too much, I didn't think. I understand why they wanted to have a light heavyweight title. Because Brian Pillman was the guy.
For the lower card guys to kind of, you know.
Yes, yes. And, you know, you had... That was also kind of for the TV champion, but, like, the TV champion was... They were trying to build into something more. The light heavyweight
yeah.
title was for the smaller guys. But the thing is, they didn't really have that many, you know, smaller guys there. So there was, like, a tournament where there was guys like Johnny Rich was in it, and I think Joey
Graham
was in it. Mike Graham and Terry Taylor were both in it. I know that because they had a match. I saw that, like, kind of recently. It was on a...
The best match in the whole tournament was the one with Bad Street and Brian Pillman at the
yeah.
Clash.
That was awesome. That was awesome.
Yeah.
And the worst part about it was Mike Graham and Terry Taylor, and Mike Graham went over. And I understand he probably had booking power, you know, an ally then. But Mike Graham ended up wrestling Ricky Morton, or he was Richard Morton at the time. Like, he was part of the York Foundation. And it was not a good match at all. They didn't gel well. And Ricky Moore is a good wrestler. He was just I thought he was a poor heel. I didn't think.
Yeah, he was too. I thought his style was not. It wasn't good for being a heel.
Yes.
He was always, you know, he's always the babyface in peril. What
yes.
he had always been. So.
So they had the tournament, and it's going to be settled at Halloween Havoc, you know, leading up to it, and another match that's scheduled for Halloween Havoc. I believe it's Johnny B. Badd versus Michael Hayes is a scheduled match, right?
I believe so, but it ended up being like Jimmy Garvin.
Yes, yes. We'll get into that when we get into the actual thing. And then, you know, there's other things we'll go into, and we'll start. Let's go ahead and start. It was the Halloween Havoc 91 was one of the first shows I ever saw, like the pay-per-view of, and
mm-hmm.
and it was directly because of that I really wanted to watch the Clash of the Champions, and I remember that Clash of the Champions because my grandfather, I think I've told the story on the show before, he recorded it for me off of TBS because we didn't have cable at the time, and back in 91, and I remember he used, because he had a video camera, like and he used his video camera and hooked up to the VCR just so he could cut the commercials out of the Clash of the Champions. And I actually still have that tape to this day that I got back in 1991 from my grandpa. Like, he died, like 5 or 6 years later. And I always remember that, like, he cut out the commercials. And, like, I think that's one of the reasons why, like, I loved that show so much. Because I watched it so many times because that was, like, my first wrestling tape. I didn't have... you know, a super tape, or, like, I eventually got super tapes and stuff like that for Christmas, you know, the years coming after that, but at the time, like, that was, like, the wrestling tape I had, so if it wasn't the weekend or, you know, Monday, you know, like, once, or Saturday night or something like that, I would watch that tape. So I I've probably seen Clash of the Champions from the November 1981. I've probably seen that show, I mean, literally 20, 30 times. Like,
yeah, me too. I had it. I mean, I watched it live,
yes,
and I had it on tape,
yes,
so I probably, many of you have.
Yes, it's just, it was just one of those good shows. It was a perfect show, and then Halloween Havoc was also a thing that really hooked me in, because WCW I had watched first before WWF. So I went from WCW to WWF because it was colorful, and then I kind of came back to WCW. So I watched both when I was a kid. Like, wrestling was something that hooked me right away, especially this time period of wrestling.
Yeah.
And I remember being very excited when I saw the Chamber of Horrors. But, see, the Chamber of Horrors, like, one thing I will say about this Halloween Havoc, I actually have the Halloween Havoc 1991 poster in my toy room.
Oh, really?
I got it probably about 6 months ago. And right after that, I met Ron Simmons, who may have edited this show. And he signed the poster for me. And I have pictures up on my Facebook of meeting him and stuff. And he's like, whoa, man, this brings me back. Like, and in that, like, autograph signing, he sat and talked to me for, you know, a few minutes just about the early 90s WCW and how that was, like, his favorite time in wrestling and stuff. And he told me he liked that more than he liked, you know, the time with the Acolytes and stuff. So it was just good to hear.
Yeah.
So the Halloween Havoc 1991, I'm going to look at the poster really fast. I'm going to get up real fast. Just give me 1 second. And I'm going to tell you guys what the advertised card was. Because the advertised card was not what it actually ended up being.
Yeah,
all
I
right,
remember
I'm
that.
I'm in the toy room. I'm looking at the poster. World Championship Wrestling presents an evening of terrifying destruction. And the poster itself is actually like a headstone with Ron Simmons versus Lex Luger total package. So, get this, okay? I mean, the babyface team is the same. El Gante, Sting, Rick, and Scott Steiner. And their opponents in the Chamber of Horrors are Oz, the One Man Gang, the Diamond Stud, and Barry Windham.
One of those guys was actually on the team. Actually made the show.
Yeah, only one of them. The Diamond Stud is the only one that was actually.
That was so
on
weird.
That team.
Windham was a face at the time, so why would he have been on that team?
Maybe they made the poster early.
I don't know.
I'm not sure, but I mean, I was.
He must have made it a hell of a lot early. Really early.
Yes. Yeah, because I just looked at the poster with my own eyes, you know.
But they were
just one of the,
plugging it on TV as him being on that team on the television leading up to it. So.
Yes, yeah. Like I said, I think they recorded a lot ahead of time. As remember when we were going through all those, like, vintage WCW things, you would see stuff taped that wouldn't air for a couple of months. That's insane. So he turned babyface in, like, June or July. So, you know, 2 months after that is, you know, August, September, and then this is in October. So I kind of feel like it's just the old phrase, the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. You know how that went with WCW.
Or they just wanted to have, like, a question of mystery or something going into the show. Is he going to be on or whatever? Maybe
right.
He signed a contract before he became a babyface in this match. You never know. Silly wrestling shit, you know.
The whole thing with the way it ended up was a much better match. Like, I mean, a much better team for the heels. Because One Man Gang left, I believe. He wasn't in WCW at this time.
He lost a hair match to Ellie Gante or something.
Yes, and so he was done. So he was done, and that was quite a bit, you know, that was quite a bit earlier.
Yeah.
So, what ended up happening? So, it's El Gante, or as Tony Schiavone, we call him El Gigante, Sting, and the Steiner Brothers, versus Abdul the Butcher, the Diamond Stud, Scott Hall, Cactus Jack, and Van Vader. And Van Vader had done appearances before in WCW, but this was his this was kind of his comeback, right? Like, or right around this time.
Yeah, that was right when he was coming back in from, like, from Japan, because he'd go back and forth. But I think he had actually signed, like a regular contract to stay in the States a little bit longer.
Yes, because at this match, I kind of had an idea that they were going to be doing something with him. Like, or that he was kind of a big deal. That, you know, he's a perfect, like, heel world champion type wrestler. Like, you know, he's big and he's fat, but he's not, like, fat where he's immobile. Because he was very mobile for being his weight. And he had that cool thing on his head that, like, shot steam. And it was like a mask type thing that he would wear, and he would shoot steam out of it, and there was a time where he did it to El Gante, and it was just awesome. So in this Chamber of Horrors match,
actually, real quick, I was gonna say, Cactus Jack was supposed to face Bill Kaznar on the show.
Yeah.
So they took Oz out of the cage and put in with Bill Kaznar, and they put Cactus in the cage, which should have been all along. That's just like common sense, isn't it?
Well, yes, but I mean, it kind of would have been cool. Just me being like a nerd of how, you know, it could have been the Steiner brothers versus the Outsiders well before their feud. You know what I mean? It would have been kind of a cool thing. Like,
I think they had to have teamed up during that summertime or something. Oz and Diamond Stud at some point.
Yes, because I know Vinny Vegas and Diamond Stud teamed up a little bit.
So
in the match, there's a rule. The rules of the match where
how they wrote Wyndham out was the thing. They were doing the, you know, at the beginning of the show, it was like Eric Bischoff was outside and guys were pulling up earlier in the day in their cars. And I think it was Cactus Jack and Abdullah Butcher. They showed up, and Vinny, it was Diamond Stud and Diamond Dallas Page. And Barry Windham and Dustin Rhodes came up in like Corvette or something. And so when they opened the door, Bischoff was shaking Barry's hand, and then fortunately they grabbed his wrist, his hand, and held it in the car door, and then Larry Zbyszko slammed the car door on his wrist. And I think he actually did have a legit injury that he was trying to work through, he was going to have to get surgery on or something like that.
Yeah, but
so
it still
that's
doesn't
they
make,
him out of the match.
It still doesn't make sense to why he would be on the heel team when he's with Dustin Rhodes, who's a babyface, and they're showing up together in their convertible. And
I don't think I don't think they themselves knew what they were doing back then. WCW with some of the stuff they were doing.
I know it was so ridiculous. It was so, you know, ridiculous, but I still loved it. That is why, like, when Brian Alvarez or Dave Meltzer, they get so mad at TNA fans, like, oh, TNA, why, it's so bad. They make so many stupid mistakes and all that stuff. Like, I was a WCW fan in 91 and 90, you know what I mean? Like, so I know what it was like. I don't like TNA that much. I mean, I do sometimes and then I don't. But, like, I understand, like, when you like something, no matter how stupid or ridiculous or nonsensical it is, like, it's just what you like. It's just what you're into.
I love The Undertaker dying at the Royal Rumble that one year and floating up to the heavens. I thought that was awesome.
Yes, and then I found out later it was Marty Jannetty that floated up. So, this Chamber of Horrors
match.
As long
as the bad stuff is so bad it's entertaining, you know, I really don't care. So,
speaking of,
it's bad and boring, and I don't want no part of it.
No. WCW, you got to give them credit for the Halloween Havoc gimmick. They embraced everything about the gimmick, like, of being Halloween. Like, the announcers would dress up. They would show these promos of, you know, Tony Schiavone in a haunted house and stuff like that. And they would, and even their set was, you know, it had graves and headstones and stuff. Like, it was cool how it was set up. And you know,
remember the Halloween Havoc 93 when they had Cactus Invader in the Texas Death Match, and he went, like, down into the stage, and he came out of his own grave all bloody?
Yes.
It was just,
I liked that a lot. I really did. I thought that was pretty cool. And so with this, the Chamber of Horrors, they're trying to think of a gimmick match. So they put these guys in this big cage, It's a giant cage. It was huge.
It was the Thunderdome they used a couple of years before with like
yes,
Flair and Shane against Funk and Muda.
Yes, yes, JTEX. Yes. So in this match, it was El Gato, Sting, the Steiners versus Abdullah, Diamond Stud, Cactus Jack, and Big Van Vader. And the rules of the match are, you know, it's Texas Tornado style. There's no tags or anything. But at some point in the match, maybe 5 minutes in or something, an electric chair came down from the ceiling and went into the ring. And so in order for you to win the match, you had to put the electric chair on one of your opponents and hit the switch, and then that person would be electrocuted.
Yeah.
So, I'm not making this up. This is exactly what it was. And as funny as it sounds, it's exactly what it was. So they're having this match, and there's ghouls, like these people that are supposed to be ghouls. They, like, would come out of the casket, and they would attack the baby faces for some reason. And it was... Also, one of the famous appearances by the referee wore the referer eye cam. Where
yeah, that thing made me want to vomit.
It was literally, you know, it was the referee that wasn't Mark Curtis or Randy Anderson that had or Nick Patrick that had the mustache. That was WCW early 90s referee. Do you remember his name?
Maybe Mike something. I can't remember.
You know who I'm referring to, though.
Yeah, I know who he looked kind of like Randy Anderson, but it wasn't him.
He looked like Super Mario. So
okay. That
was the referee wearing the referee cam in that match. I believe it was him. It was either him or Randy Anderson. It was one of the two.
Which was a bicycle helmet with a camera in it.
That's literally all it was. I mean, that's it. It's like they taped a webcam to a bicycle helmet, and that was the camera. So, I mean, it was a cool concept. It was different, and they were trying to do something different, especially for this match. So they would show that every once in a while, like, you know, his visual, what he's seeing. And so, you know, during the match, like, the switch fell, the switch to turn on the electric chair.
Yeah.
And Cactus Jack realized it, so he turned the switch back on, you know, because they're all fighting. And they're using plunder, as Dusty Rhodes would say, and it's a hell of a brawl. I mean, say what you want about this match, as goofy as it is, I thought it was awesome. You know?
Yeah, it was fun.
So the moral of the story, end of the match, Cactus Jack thinks that Abdul is about to put Rick Steiner into the electric chair. So
that's
he's
right.
Sitting there, he's climbing the cage, and he's going to go do that. Well, while Cactus is climbing the cage, Rick Steiner gives Abdullah, like, a giant belly-to-belly. Giant, like, huge, and it was awesome. And put him into the electric chair. And Abdullah, what a fucking fat fuck. I mean, he's so fat. And it made the visual of this way better. Because then they put the electric chair thing on him. And I remember as a kid, because Abdullah sold it so well, I thought he really was electrocuted. As a child, I mean, you got to think, in 91, I was 8. So,
that had to be the most he's ever sold for anybody.
I mean, he sold the hell out of that thing. I thought he had burned, or it was great. It was great. So, so the babyfaces win the match. Then a bunch of ghouls come down to try carrying out Abdullah.
They put the ramp back up.
Yes. They came up, like, they had that... They had that the coolest thing about WCW was that ramp. People could talk about all the WrestleMania entrances and all the amazing stuff. To me, that's what wrestling should be, is that ramp. I thought it was so awesome. It made them look so mainstream. It made them look so, you know, chic. It was awesome. It was just such a good look for.
Thing I didn't like about their sets back then, I don't know for how many years they had the crooked-ass WCW sign up on that stage. Boo me.
Yeah, I mean, I see where you're coming from with that. But I just thought that thing was awesome, man. I thought it was great.
Yeah, I've never seen the ramp like that. I think, like, when I would watch like Primetime Wrestling, and maybe like at the Maple Leaf Gardens, they always had a ramp or something. In Canada, at one of the, at the Maple Leaf Gardens in I think it was Toronto or something like that.
Yeah.
They always had like a ramp like that. I thought it was cool.
But I mean, the whole, they also had this, like in the background, it was like a long, I mean, the only thing that I could, you know, it looked like a long piece of pencil, like you put on a Christmas tree. And that's what they would come out, is this, you know, they would have like this shiny entrance where they'd come out and they'd go, you know, down that ramp. And in a lot of matches, they would use that ramp, you know, to its advantage. They would use it as a ring. They would use, like, you know, they would, because the ramp would shrink, like it was, you know, it was square with the ring. So like you could be on the ramp and pull your opponent towards the rope.
Like doing them, yeah, you know, like you, instead of going to the floor, you could just do like some high spots and stuff on the ramp right there.
It was all, I mean, I loved it. It was just so great. So they're coming down the ramp, and speaking of, just real fast, for my I have a wrestling ring, like a scale wrestling ring, like for the wrestling toys. It was made by Jax. It's like the Elimination Chamber ring or whatever. Well, I've been customizing it to make it a WCW ring, like from the early 90s. I'll send you pictures of it. And I'm actually in the process of buying another scale ring, because I'm getting some fabric for it, and I'm actually making the WCW, because I, like, you know, it's already the gray canvas with the WCW on there with the blue ring skirt with the World Championship Wrestling and the yellow pads with the black ropes, you know what I mean? It's all ready. And then, you know, so I'm making it into a WCW thing, because that's my favorite era of wrestling, so I might as well, you know, if I'm going to have like a toy ring that could be customized, why not make it just like that? So
yeah.
with that ramp, because I just think that's the coolest thing. It's so great. I love it. Well, so they're coming down the ramp, the ghouls, to come get Abdullah for no reason at all. I have no idea. Maybe they're going to take him to hell. And Abdullah just beats the shit out of these guys just to get his heat back, I guess.
He fell on his one fucker's head.
Oh.
He was wearing glasses. And I know he did that shit on purpose, too. That was fucked up.
Of course. Because, I mean, we've seen the Abdullah shoot interviews. You kind of know what type of guy he is, you know. I don't necessarily respect that.
This is like one of the few memorable Abdullah matches, because seeing one Abdullah match, pretty much seen them all.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I have a good Abdullah story for you.
I'm going to cut myself. I'm going to cut you. I'm going to pull out the fork or a pencil. There's not going to be a pinfall. So.
Yes, here's a good story for you. I was in IWA Mid-South show. It's probably somewhere between 2005 and 2006, I would assume. And Abdul the Butcher was on the show, and he was wrestling Madman Fondo. And I remember Ian Rotten wasn't there that night. He had another booking somewhere else. So, or he was doing something, I don't know. And I remember he got back, and he was so pissed, because Abdullah and Madman Fondo, they never went into the ring. The whole match took place outside of the ring. And the reason for that was because Abdullah was too fucking fat to get into the ring. Yes. So they, I mean, they brawled everywhere around, but it was just, you know, that was, you know, I remember everybody there at the show was like, oh, God, you know, he had so many great legendary hardcore matches. I think, what are you talking about, man? He was in early 90s WCW. Who cares? Where the cowboy hat was. So the second match on the show was, like I said, that WCW embraced the Halloween aspect of it. So there's a team called the Creatures that came out. And this was just kind of a way of getting Big Josh and PN News, I think, on the show. Because they weren't normally a team. They were just a team this show. And they just beat the shit out of the Creatures. And do you know who the Creatures were?
I sure don't.
Yeah, I don't know who they were. Like, I remember, like, one of them was definitely Joey Mack. I'm sure of
mm-hmm.
it. The other one,
yeah,
I didn't recognize the body at all. So, But that's the good thing about like Joey Maddox and those type of guys. They were always around, and they would always, you know, they would fill those spots, you know, like you know, if there needs to be a masked guy or there needs to be something, you know, they would be there and they would have their spot on the card, and they would be the, you know, the low man on the totem pole. But they always got booked, and they were always, I'm sure they were making decent money too. So, mm-hmm. you know, I respect Joey Maddox. I mean, I could be wrong. I don't know if it was Joey Maddox, but I'm pretty sure he was one of the guys. He wrestled a lot like Joey Maddox.
Yeah.
And so, and Beautiful Bobby had a match against Terrence Taylor. And Terrence Taylor had just recently became Terrence Taylor. It was...
Right at the beginning of the year.
Yes. It was... Hang on, when was it?
It was like January, because... remember Michael Wall Street?
Yeah, he left.
He left, and so they had that, he went to the WWF, so they had that gap, that vacancy, like in the York Foundation. And so Terry Taylor, they turned him.
Yes, and one of the best parts was, if you watch the Saturday night, or it wasn't even called Saturday night at the time, I don't think, in 91,
no.
It was just, I think it was called World Championship Wrestling, something.
Yeah.
And in Mike Rotundo's wrestling, he's, you know, they're like, yeah, he's going to be at the Clash of the Champions. They advertise on the show. And then the announcers obviously cut in later, like, well, Alexandra York says that Mike Rotunda's like a chump, and he's not even going to be at the Clash. She's going to have someone else. And there she is with him, you know what I mean? They're trying to figure out a win, you know, and they leave together. And like,
does,
you
does
see
that help that this babyface match with Ricky Morton and Terry Taylor? And the ring announcer announces Terry Taylor as the computerized man of the 1990s before the turn.
Yes. It was just one of those. It was one of those things where, you know. And the funny thing is, that's where he did the turn. Was there, and eventually, you know, Ricky Morton became Richard Morton and also joined. So it's kind of it's kind of that the rockabilly road dog thing of, you know, how they end up together anyways.
Yeah.
So Bobby Eaton and Terrence Taylor had a match, and I thought it was good. I remember
this
that
was like maybe the best match on the show.
Yes. It was, you know,
well,
the
I'll take it back. I'll say I like Steve Austin and Dustin. It was a great match.
Well, yeah, that was very good too. But Bobby Eaton and Terry Taylor, like, you wouldn't necessarily expect, I mean, I guess you would expect a good match, but I mean, it meant nothing. The winner didn't get anything. It was just a match, no feud. It was just a match between two guys. And, you know, the crowd was into it, and it was just a really good match. So, yeah, like, you know, it's one of the top matches on the show for sure, like, when it comes to quality. And then Johnny B. Badd was supposed to wrestle Michael Hayes. And Michael Hayes said he was injured or something, and Jimmy Garvin's like, you know, I don't want to wrestle. And so it ended up, you know, he was forced to wrestle. So he wrestled Johnny B. Badd and lost, like, to that.
They were baby faces. The Birds were baby faces at this point. Johnny B. Badd was the heel with Teddy Long. You're thinking of that Super Brawl match that they had where Michael Hayes hurt his back.
That's what I'm thinking. Okay.
Yeah. And
but
like
Johnny
just like Jimmy Garvin just showed
face,
up.
Though.
He wasn't even Jimmy Garvin wasn't even under contract, and somehow Nick Bockwinkel can make him wrestle a match or something.
Yes, that's what but Nick Bockwinkel said you still have a contract, that's what he said.
Oh.
Yeah, so yeah, this was just it was scheduled then against Jimmy Garvin, wasn't it? Yeah, I am thinking of that clash. Okay. Yeah, because I thought it was much later, because, like, the Freebirds were still there. But the thing about this was, didn't Michael Hayes try interfering in this match?
I don't know if he did or not. All I remember is at the end of the match, the arm that was supposed to be hurt, he gave him, a left hand with it. And showed he wasn't hurt.
Yes. I'm pretty sure this was kind of making the Freebirds a little heelish. And Johnny B. Badd, I remember, like, kind of came off as a babyface at the end of it. because this was right around the time where he was kind of starting to go in that direction of being a babyface. Because before, when he first started, he was like a super heel because he was supposed to be essentially just, you know, hey, look, he's, you know the kind of the old kill the queer game. You know, that's what they were trying to go for with him.
Yeah.
So they wanted to make him look super gay and to get people to hate him due to him being super gay. It was just one of those, I mean, that, it was the South, and in that time period, it was okay.
I remember another thing that hurt this show was, I think this was the first time Atlanta was in the World Series or something. And,
I didn't know they're
based out of Atlanta. I can't remember, because I was never really much into a baseball fan. I kind of liked Atlanta Braves only because WCW was in Atlanta. So it kind of
yeah.
something like that.
I was the same way as a kid.
Yeah, and it was like one of the last games of the World Series or something, and it went right up against Halloween Havoc. It did the same thing the following year, I remember. I just thought that was funny to get this pay-per-view based out of it. You know, it's a company based out of Atlanta that's going up against another thing that they're a part of, you know, with the Turner and all that.
Yes, that's fun. Yeah, because it was, cause the event wasn't in Atlanta. It was, I think it was in Tennessee or something. But yeah, that's, you know, that they still catered to the home base a lot. Like at their
mm-hmm.
television shows, they would talk about, you know, going to the Omni for just a live event. And this was up until like 93, they would do that, where they would just, you know, talk about a live event coming to the Omni, even though they're on pay per view. It's crazy.
Yeah,
so,
like when I was younger and I was too young to know any better, and I asked Mom if we'd go to the Omni because they plugged it every damn weekend on TV.
She said,
where's that? I said, it's in Atlanta. I said, we're in Mississippi. We're not going to the Omni.
Oh, man. I'm sorry. Did you ever get to go to any of those like early 90s WCW shows?
I don't think I did. I think I went to like a couple of Nitros.
Well, yeah, I did that too.
They really didn't come to like around Mississippi and Louisiana much back then. Because I went more to like Mid-South stuff. Because it was like that was where it was based out of, like Oklahoma, Louisiana, Mississippi. I went to more of those kind of cards and stuff like that. I went to one like NWA card in like 1988 in Jackson, Mississippi. That was about it.
That's my Achilles heel with wrestling is Mid-South. That's something I really need to start watching. And
yeah, I mean, I went to lived in Louisiana for a little while in Monroe, Louisiana, and go to the Monroe Civic Center. You know how they, like, in the foyer right there, they have all these, like, trophies, and they have the, like, pictures of all the sporting events that's been there, and they got, like, pictures of Magnum TA and the Junkyard Dog and stuff like that.
Wrestling that's awesome.
In the Civic Center, yeah.
That's awesome.
I got a bunch of stuff.
That's great. That's just, I don't know, it's just one of those cool things.
Yeah.
Like, how wrestling history can become real history in cities. Like, you know, because it's so stupid. Wrestling's so dumb. I don't know why we like it. It's so stupid. But it's awesome. And, you know, if it actually makes a difference in a city or, you know, it becomes like a big deal, like, I think it's awesome, like, anytime, like, John Cena gets a key to a city or something like that, because
yeah.
it's looked at being mainstream, you know, it's pretty cool. I like
yeah.
that. So, Steve Austin, Dustin Rhodes had a great match, it was a draw, 15 minutes.
And both juiced.
That was the best part about the WCW TV title was the time limit. I love that you had to win, you had to pin the guy in a certain amount of time, or you're not going to be the champion. And
yeah, I always loved. They had always had the great heel TV champions like Arn Anderson or Steve Austin or like a Tully Blanchard or somebody. You know, week after week they're defending the title and they're just about to get beat. But every week they somehow escape by the skin of their teeth.
Even later, I think Orndorff had it, didn't he?
Yeah, he should have. That's right.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he did. And I
think Austin was the best TV champion they ever had.
Yes, he had it for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
A long time.
He won it in, like, May, and he lost it, I think, in May of 91. He lost it in, like, April of 92, so that's almost a year.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was crazy. So, yeah, they had a really good match. And it was Steve Austin and Dustin Rhodes had, like, a very storied career together. Like, they seemed to, like, be attracted to each other in wrestling matches. Not, like, you know, that kind. But, like, you know, they wrestled each other, their, like, Austin's entire career. You know, they had a couple feuds in WCW. They had a couple feuds in WWF. Like, and not big ones, necessarily. But, like, they would have, you know, a lot of, like, Raw matches or...
Yeah, just like TV matches.
Yeah, TV matches where they would do a lot of stuff, though. And they always had fun matches, even...
They probably have two, like, along with, like, Brian Pillman, maybe, like, they were, like, the hottest young guys in business at the time, I think.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yes, it was, you know, a lot to come from that was, you know, Steve Austin and Dustin Rhodes. You know, that was their first big, you know, high-profile match.
Steve Austin ended up doing okay, I guess.
Yeah, he did okay. Yeah. He eventually, you know, got out of that mid-Carter stance. So then there was a not-so-good match of Bill Kazmaier versus Oz. And Bill Kazmaier was just a project for WCW, kind of like El Gante. You know, they thought, hey, this guy's so strong, and just like how Gante was tall. I mean, that's all they had.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't have really any wrestling ability. And this is against Oz, who's a young Kevin Nash, for those who don't know, which I'm sure everybody does. And he was green at the time. So
literally.
Yeah. That was very good. So a green Kevin Nash versus a green, you know, Bill Kazmaier did not equal a good match. It was a lot like those, remember those Hercules and Ultimate Warrior matches where it was just two big guys, you know, they didn't gel well together at all, and at least
it was so like Warrior, at least he could say he was going to do something, you know? I mean,
yes.
You look at Kazmaier and Oz and just like a couple of stiffs. Which Ultimate Warrior was a stiff, but he's a stiff that actually made it, so.
Yes. But I mean, I'm just talking about the same type of match, which is big lumbering guys pounding on each other horribly. And
actually, I was wondering, would I prefer Ultimate Warrior against Hercules at that time or Oz against Bill Kazmaier? I might go with Oz against Bill Kazmaier, to be honest. Warrior was so horrible.
Yeah, Warrior was not a very good wrestler. Not very good at all. And then there was, WWE still does this sometimes now, where they'll kind of put a squash match on their pay-per-view show. They do that now, and WCW did it, you know, all through its history. They would do, you know, random matches that really didn't make any sense on their pay-per-views. And this was one of them.
There's no point in it being on here.
I just thought it was awesome because later when I watched it again, I had watched a lot of AWA, and Doug Summers, you know, was from AWA.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just so crazy how he just got destroyed in a minute. And, you know, because AWA had gone down, it kind of stunk for a lot of those guys that were, you know, regulars there. And the best he could get, because, you know, he wasn't necessarily in the best shape or anything. And he was a good worker, though. He has to get squashed by another green wrestler, Van Hammer, you know, who was horrible.
Yeah.
You know, if I was in charge of WCW, I definitely would have put Doug Summers over Van Hammer because he's a way better wrestler. But, you know, Van Hammer destroyed him and beat him pretty quickly and stuff like that. So it was a cool fight.
I hated
when
they were pushing Van Hammer like around the end of 92 and, they're teaming with Sting and guys like that. He's beaten Texas Jack. That's horrible.
Yeah, that was... Yeah, I didn't like that at all. And the thing with him is... Didn't he eventually go to jail or something? He eventually got arrested or... Something happened to him. And he left WCW for years. And he never popped up anywhere else. And then eventually came back in WCW. And he was never all that good. He just...
And to his credit, he knew, like, you know, he's talking about, I saw an interview with him, and he's talking about he's getting pushed, and he wasn't very good. At least he could admit that he wasn't very good, and he shouldn't have been pushed like he was. So,
I
like that.
He had to have known that, and I remember I read in Mick Foley's book that he would say such dumb shit all the time. Like he would say, you know, I'm here to save the company and stuff like that. I just thought that's funny.
I prefer PN News just because he cracked me up with his stupid raps.
Yes, PN News had some of the worst raps ever.
That's true.
I mean, they were never on beat, and a lot of times they wouldn't rhyme, or if they did rhyme, they were such simple rhymes, like cat and fat or something, you know, just stupid. I mean, like he'd be like, yo, baby, yo, and like he would always start bringing the name of the city, and it was only in the South, so, you know, they'd be like, here I am in Chattanooga. I'm going to beat up Jimmy Garvin, you know, like just, you know, just stupid crap. And it was horrible, but I mean, I loved it. And he has, back to wrestling toys and how I collect, him and Ricky Morton. And I think there's a Ric Flair, but mainly Ricky Morton and PN News have the two rarest WCW Galoob toys because they were never released. There was only a few of them ever made. And so, like, there's collectors that have them. I've seen them go for, like, over $1,000. So, I don't think I will ever see one and still be married at the same time. So, but it'd be cool to have. Like, I could imagine explaining to my wife, like, look, I got both of them for $1,000. You know, it's kind of a good deal because I got two of them. And, like, she just sees, like, two little pieces of, you know, rubber or plastic or whatever. So, moving on. That elusive WCW light heavyweight title tournament, you know, with stars such as, you know, Joey Maggs and Mike Graham and Bad Street. There was finally a final. It was Richard Morton from the New York Foundation against Flying Brian, which I remember going in. I knew immediately, right when the tournament started, at when I was 8, that Brian Pillman was going to win the whole thing.
Oh, yeah. He was the only other guy. I mean, I couldn't think of anybody else.
Yes. Definitely. So he beat him, and he was the first champ. Like, it was...
I think also they probably started this division because they were getting in they just done the Japan Super Show. They probably want to bring Chris Tiger over, so they had to do something to, you know, to have a little feud there and get him over there in the States. So that's probably why they did that.
Well, Jushin Liger was just, he was weeks away from debuting. I mean, he was...
Yeah, I mean, he came in like December.
Yes, because I remember at that Clash in 91, like the November one, I remember they played a video for Jushin Liger coming in.
I think it was just like highlights with him against Pixis Kid, Chris Benoit.
Yes, it was just a bunch of stuff. I don't know. I knew that he was coming, so I really think that, you know, that was the big plan. The big plan was starting that title just to, you know, get, you know, something for them to fight over, I guess.
Yep.
So it was just, you know, it was one of those cool things. I liked it. I thought it was cool. So he won the title, you know, so that feud now has substance when Jushin Liger does get in. And Brian Pillman and Jushin Liger had some great matches.
Yeah.
People should go out of their way to see that.
The best one they had was the one at Super Brawl 2.
All right. So the weeks leading up to Halloween Havoc, we heard about the Halloween Phantom and how the Halloween Phantom was going to come to WCW and, you know, do some damage or, you know, whatever. And so Tom Zink comes out, the Z-Man, and he's waiting for the Halloween Phantom. And mind you that I'm 8, I'm 8 years old. And who is that man as he walks out? I saw him with his mask on for, I would say, I don't know, 4 seconds before I figured out it was Rick Rude. I don't know how anybody could not have figured out that was Rick Rude immediately. He did nothing to try hiding his face at all.
And he was one of those guys that always had, like, a very thin frame on him.
Yeah, thin and, like, chiseled like a Greek god. So
yeah.
No one else looked like him. But in his defense, he didn't wear a shirt during the match. Or he wore, you know, I think tights. Like, you know, he was covered from head to toe. And except for, you know, you saw, like, the mask barely covered his face. And then, you know, you saw his neck. So, like, that was one of the things that gave
away.
His
mustache sticking through, I think.
Yeah, his mustache was sticking through. So, Holly Phantom beats, you know, Tom Zink. And they're like, that move looks familiar when he did the Rude Awakening. And then...
Yeah, he said, Tony Schiavone said this signature move called the Rude Awakening. And, well, they never called it that before. I mean, they've never even said that before in this company. They've never used it in this company before. So, thanks for giving it away, Tony.
Yeah.
Even though I know the Rude Awakening.
He's famous for that. Poor Tony. So, so they had that match, and then Rick Rude was kind of the first member of the Dangerous Alliance. He was the first.
Yeah.
He was the first one. Because Paul Lee was gone.
I think
it's like
Medusa was also one first member.
Yeah, it was Medusa and Paul Lee dangerously. Paul Heyman, like, he had been gone. He left.
He got suspended by Jim Herd. Apparently, they were going to do this deal. At some show in Memphis, they were going to do, like, a unification match with Lex Luger and USWA champion Jerry Lawler to, like, kind of, like, unify their titles, to, like, kind of rehab the WCW title from when Flair took the NWA title to WWF. So, like, you know, like, make the title look a little bit better. And somehow, I think Eddie Gilbert had asked Jerry Jarrett about something about if he was going to be at the WCW show in Memphis, and Eddie Gilbert was like, he and Paul Lee were like the best friends back then, and so he got suspended because they thought Paul Lee had let the cat out of the bag about doing this unification deal in Memphis, and so they ended up not doing it at all, and Paul Lee got suspended, and even though he never said anything, it's just Eddie Gilbert was the one that said something, so. That's why he was suspended, but then they settled the deal and brought him back.
I would love to read a book by Paul Heyman. I mean, that book could be 1,000 pages. I would love all of them. I'm sure
right.
I would. Just because he's done so much, you know. Just, I mean, I think you can have a 500-page book just before you even get to ECW.
I mean, just go from, you know, doing... Worked for the Aftermags as a photographer, going from that to being a manager, going from that to being, like, he started probably one of the more influential, revolutionary type of wrestling companies, I would say.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, for sure. For sure, yeah. So, WCW at the time didn't have that many pay-per-views. I think they had 4 or 5 a year, right?
I think that year they had maybe 6.
All right, so, you know, pay-per-view, tag titles, Arn Anderson, Larry Zbysko, defended against Todd Champion and Firebreaker Chip. And the name of Todd Champion and Firebreaker Chip, they were a team. What was their team name, Katara?
They were the Patriots. They were part of WCW Special Forces.
They were part of WCW's Special Forces. Whatever the hell that means. Like, it made no sense, and it was just... I liked them, though. I remember as a kid, I liked them. I remember thinking that Firebreaker Chip was so little, though. Because he was so short. Like,
yeah.
He was so short. Like, you know, he's like 5'3", 5'4". And Todd Champion, did he ever do anything after being Todd Champion?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I like them, though. I like them. Well, you know, they got whomped by Arn Anderson and Larry Zbyszko.
Yeah.
Well, the main event of the show is Luger against Ron Simmons, defending his title. And Ron Simmons had recently, you know, beat his tag team partner, his old tag team partner, Butch Reed, in a cage match. And so he was out on his own now, you know. So he beat his former partner, and then all of a sudden he's in line for a world title match, which, I mean, I love Ron Simmons. Trust me, I love him. I was just talking about how I met him. Great guy. I just didn't see how they got from point A to point B and how he was the one that got the title shot. I guess he was just filler until they got to the inevitable Sting thing, but it was kind of weird how that happened, though. And another thing that was weird was that they made this best two out of three falls. I don't know why they did this, but they did.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like that. These two guys don't seem like the kind that would you know, be in a 2 out of 3 falls match against each other.
Yes. So they had a match. It was 2 out of 3 falls. I remember. You know, Ron Simmons beat him with something, like, right away. Like, within the first 5 minutes. It's five buses, like, right away. And then he got disqualified later. Wasn't it that, like, didn't Harley Race or someone pull down the ropes or something?
It was Simmons was leaning against the ropes, and Luger had charged him, and they were going to do the spot where, you know, both of them tumble over the top rope. But Harley Race, like, held on to his tights, the Simmons tight, so he wouldn't go over, so it looked like he threw Luger over, so Luger takes the fall by disqualification.
Yes, which was such a stupid rule at the time. The over-the-top rule. That was so
dumb. I just figured they had that for, it's just an easy way for a guy to get DQ'd, that's all.
Oh, of course it is.
Yeah.
And then Luger eventually, another thing that we didn't discuss about Luger's heel turn is his finishing move is always the torture rack. But when he was the heel world champion, he did the pile driver.
That's right.
That was his heel champion move, which always, you know, kind of made me sad that he never used that later. You know, like when he came back to WCW as a heel, he could have used that as, you know, as his heel finisher. So
I think he called it the attitude adjustment.
Yeah.
AA for John Cena.
Yep. Yep. It was great. So now we're going to Clash, you know, 91. And, you know, Rick Rude jumps right in, gets himself a title shot for the U.S. title. It's a way to get, you know, Luger right into the mix of being a big deal. Which he was. I mean, everybody has to understand that, you know, he is a big deal. He was, you know, he could have been a main eventer anywhere. And after he left WWF, you know, WCW had a big chance with him. The thing that I think hurt Rick Rude was that WCW was so top-heavy with great heel champions. Like, when he first got there, Luger was champion, and then Vader was champion right after Luger, you know. You know, with the little in-between by Sting, you know, the few months that Sting had the title. But Luger, you know, was so great, and Vader was so great. So Rick Rude never really got a chance to be the guy for the company. And that was always kind of sad to me.
Yeah.
So we're at the Clash of the Champions. And the opening match was a lumberjack match. And I remember watching this as a kid, and I thought it was called a lumberjack match because Big Josh was a lumberjack. That's the only reason I thought that they called this match a lumberjack match. And I remember when I saw later, like even up, you know, as I was getting older in age, you know, I would think like, whoa, man, they got that from Big Josh, you know, that they called the match a lumberjack match. So it was Thomas Rich who.
I hate a lumberjack match. I think this was stupid.
Oh, I like.
I don't
this.
remember.
I,
I don't know if I've ever seen a really good one.
Oh, well, you know, put in Clash 91, November 91, and you'll see that, you know, this is a good one. I always liked Big Josh. You know, even when he was Doink, I liked him a lot. Like, I thought of, like, when I was a kid, when I was, you know, probably after, you know, maybe 10 or 11 or something like that, I knew that the type of wrestler that I liked, I guess I was even younger than that, was always, like, the thicker, stockier guys. Like, I liked Rick Steiner and I liked Big Josh just because they were, you know, they were thicker wrestlers. They were just, you know, they weren't like Sting, which I liked Sting, but, like I thought that, you know, hey, if I was a wrestler, that's what I would look like because I was, you know, shorter and stockier, you know. So I was like, that's what I would look like. I'd be that kind of wrestler. So Big Josh, like, and he would do that, you know, essentially the earthquake splash. But he was much smaller than Earthquake was. But I thought it still looked great when he did it. I thought it was awesome. And so he beat Thomas Rich, a member of the York Foundation, with...
Who was his friend who he teamed with at, like, beginning of the year when he... It was Thomas Rich was in a match or something. Something happened. He was getting double-teamed, and Big Josh came out of the stands, and they put him in handcuffs, and then he broke the handcuffs or something. And he was a friend of Tommy Rich.
Yeah, it was Tommy Rich. Yeah, because that's why they had this match.
Yeah. Because they had lost the... It was like Big Josh and I think it was the Z-Man and Dustin Rhodes lost the six-man title to the York Foundation. I think it was.
Yes.
When Tommy Rich hit Big Josh with, like, computer or something like that.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. But it's kind of funny that they went in that direction because he was the one that turned heel. So instead of, you know, protecting your new heel, you give the baby face who got turned on the win. So,
and then there was one other thing weird in this match is Big Josh gets thrown outside and just, like, out of nowhere, the Young Pistols jump on him doing a heel turn.
Oh, yeah. And that
was just, like, so random.
They picked a random spot for them to turn heel.
Yeah.
Which, to me, like, I felt like they had bigger stuff at the Clash because more people would see the Clash than they would see at their pay-per-views. It was like free TV. So, Firebreaker Chip and Beautiful Bobby had a match. Beautiful Bobby had an amazing match.
Which at the time
match
was a babyface match.
Yes, it was. And it wasn't very good. You know, they kind of went to the well too many times to try to get Bobby Eaton to carry a guy to a great match.
Mostly just had Bobby Eaton out there to get a win since he was going to be turning heel, like, in the next week.
Yes.
And going with Paulie and the Dangerous Alliance. So.
Yes, he was getting ready to go in that direction. So they were just trying to, you know, give him a win. And he even shook Chip's hand afterwards, and it was... you know, just trying to show his professionalism. All right. Well, Sting, in the weeks prior, had been getting these big presents, these big boxes, and he would open them up, and one time it was Cactus Jack. And another time it was Abdul the Butcher, and he'd get his ass beat by both of them. So he was like, you know, whatever, it's fine. Then I got my ass kicked by them. I'm like, ooh, there's another box. This is great.
I was worried
it
was more of that Black Scorpion bullshit from the year before. That's
it
what
it
felt
what?
Like. Like the Black Scorpion stuff from the year before that was so horrible.
Yes, but it ended up being a much better payoff.
Oh, yeah.
Much better payoff. So Sting comes off of this interview.
Anything that pays off with making Ric Flair cut his hair is no buys.
No. I agree. So Sting had come out, and, you know, he got another box, except this box wasn't like a box like how it, like everything else was like a big giant package almost. Like it looked like a giant present. Like you would open them up and, you know, the wrestler would be in there.
It was like a box refrigerator would be in.
Yes, this box though, it looked like
one of those Roman sedans that they had back in those days, you know, with the where the kings and the queens would come out like in front of the like in gladiator times or something.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Exactly. Yes. Oh no, I'm picturing it in my head right
now.
I could close my eyes and just imagine, you know, the thing, you know, and it I think it was red. It's like red curtains and Medusa came out and she's wearing
it was
like
carried by a bunch of guys you probably see doing jobs that following Saturday on TBS.
Yes, and Medusa had on like a frilly outfit and she had this like diamond looking headband thing.
It was like Barbara Eden from I Dream of Jeannie.
Yes. So that was what she was going for. And so, you know, she's like, ooh, I want you, Sting. And Sting's like, ooh, yeah, wow. Yeah, you sent all these boxes? So you're the reason I got my fucking ass kicked? You know, but sure, I'll fuck you, which, you know, he probably should have. I guess I would have fucked you, too.
And any real man would do the same, so...
Yes. So, you know, she's like kind of rubbing his chest and stuff like that and trying to get him to turn around. He's following. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, Lex Luger comes out and clips Sting's knee. I remember like Jim Ross, like, he clipped his knee,
He was the knee he had operated on that problem with the year before.
Yeah, that's
you know, when
fired me.
When he blew out his patella in 1990.
Yes.
And it was funny because Luger clipped his leg, but then when he started working on his leg again, he grabbed the wrong one. I guess he got confused or something.
Poor Luger. Whatever. Hey, man, it's not easy being champion. So he got down and he put Sting's leg against, you know, that awesome ramp that I was telling you about. You know, smash his leg against him. So, you know, he just got injured by Lex Luger, his old best friend. They were tag team partners, his old best friend. And
it was always weird to me because he's a world champion. I guess, I don't know, maybe because Sting's the U.S. champion, but and maybe he'll come after you, you know, just even if you don't do anything to him, you know, just because he's technically the number one contender. But, I mean, when you jump him, it's like, okay, now you just determined that he's definitely kind of come after you now. So, I don't know. It's always weird.
Yeah, like they explained it as like, you know, how, like Luger said, Sting stopped talking to him after he won the world title and something like that. And, you know, Sting eventually said that, you know, you're bad now. You're hanging out with these people. I don't want to talk to you if you're hanging out with these people. And so it made a little bit of sense.
Yeah.
So... next match was great. I think it was the next match. It was, the next match wasn't Steve. No. The next match was the Diamond Stud, wasn't it?
Yeah, Tom Zinkton and the Diamond Stud in 1 minute and 40 seconds.
Yes, so Diamond Stud is Scott Hall, and he's going to squash the Z-Man just like, Rick Rude's squashing.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the Z-Man got him with a crucifix pit and rolled him up and pinned him and Scott Hall like sold it like, oh my God, blah, blah, blah. He kind of did a very similar thing with the kid, but that really works on getting someone over. With some of this like kind of established, like, you know, puts you over like that, like it really does a lot.
I think Tom Zink was probably more established than Diamond Stud at this point. Because he had been there
no,
all
I know, but he's still low on the card at the time.
It would have been like it helped establish him more, except the whole match, it was like they got the thing in the corner of the screen checking on Sting, so everybody's looking at that, so I don't know how much good that did, you know.
Yeah, it was.
Because they were all focused on Sting going to the hospital and getting an ambulance and stuff like that.
Eric Bischoff went with Sting to the hospital. And they're like, because Sting has a match with Rick Rude later tonight. And
yeah.
So Paulie comes out later in the night before the match. It says that
also,
in the contract,
also real quick, when they were putting him in the ambulance, he's got just a little clue here. They got Bobby Eaton saying he's got plenty of time to get there and come back. So kind of getting that heel turn started right there by saying that.
Yes, yes, yes. Because Bobby Eaton wasn't working. You know, he was on the opposite side. So.
Mm-hmm.
So then there's a match between Pia News and Steve Austin. And this is what proves that Steve Austin was such an up-and-comer and a great wrestler at the time. Because he got a pretty good match out of Pia News, the Rap Master. I remember from this match is the finish. Like, I think he misses like some sort of splash.
I think he misses a charge in the corner, and then Austin puts his feet on the ropes or something.
Yes, and just rolls them up and pins them, and it was interesting. It was interesting, but yeah, like back up, Paulie Dangerously comes out eventually, and said that if Sting doesn't defend the title, he's stripped of his title. He's stripped of his title because he has a signed contract with Rick Rude, and he's going to take the title away from him, and. That's that,
Rick
pretty much.
Yeah. The champion.
Yes. Yes. So, there's a Cactus Jack Van Hammer match. And I remember, doesn't Cactus Jack use, like, a guitar? Did he use a guitar?
He grabbed Hammer's guitar when he was outside, and Hammer, like, took his head through the ropes to get him back in, and he's like, he had one of those V-shaped guitars and, like, shoved it in his throat, and then
yep.
went in there and rolled him up.
Yeah,
it was a great
yeah.
day to see Van Hammer finally get beat.
It was great. It was very great.
Mm-hmm.
And so next is one of the matches that is by far in my top five favorite matches of all time. And it is the Enforcers, Double A Arn Anderson, the Living Legend, Larry Zbysko, against the Natural Dustin Rhodes, and it's supposed to be Barry Windham. And Barry Windham obviously still can't wrestle because he has that broken arm. And Larry Zbysko started to call himself the Cruncher because he crunched... Barry Windham's arm in the car.
Yeah.
So, I remember WCW had just gotten new tag titles. They were brand new at the show.
Yeah.
And they looked great. I remember there was shiny gold, and they looked great against Arn Anderson because Arn Anderson was so tan. And so the belt with how tan he was, I remember how, like, you know, it just worked. That, you know, the belt looked great. Those new belts were awesome. And Dustin Rhodes comes out with Barry Windham. Barry Windham's wearing street clothes. And he's like, you know, I can't wrestle, but I found a partner for my friend here. And all of a sudden, this dragon comes out, you know, with a giant dragon head. And in all of his glory, Ricky Steamboat comes out. And
the place went crazy.
The place went nuts. Arn Anderson is yelling at the announcers, trying to get to be stopped. And you hear him say,
Jim Ross is saying,
well,
you guys
are going
to defend the title, not us.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. You know those guys defend the title, not us, and not me. So, by far, match of the show. Like, by far, match of the show. This match was better than anything on Halloween Havoc.
Oh, yeah.
It was great. It was great. So, Ricky Steamboat's back after... a pretty lackluster run in the WWF.
He was in there, like, I think he started back on TV as, like, maybe April, like, right after WrestleMania, doing the dragon gimmick. And he never did anything with him.
No, he did nothing. He did nothing.
And then he quit. He was supposed to do, like, a job to The Undertaker and then get stretchered out, which he had no problem with. But then they wanted him to, it was one of those TV tapings where they taped all those shows in one night, and they wanted him to come out and do another TV job for IRS and get taken out on a stretcher all in the same night, and he didn't want to do that, which he thought it was stupid, which it was.
Yes, and like, yes, I remember, I've heard him say, like, no offense to IRS, that he would gladly have done it, yeah. Well, you know, this match, 20 minutes, if not more, and just back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and then finally, Ricky Steamboat is the one taking the heat. And Dustin Rhodes comes in, hot tag, you know, he gets cut off. Ricky Steamboat tags himself back in when the other people aren't, you know, when the other guys aren't looking. They turn around, flying body press, one, two, Dustin Rhodes jumps over just to stop, you know, either Arn or Larry, whichever the other one was.
Yeah, Rhodes had hit Arn Anderson with the bulldog, and then Steamboat came off with the flying body press.
It was a great finish. So awesome that, you know, they won the titles that way. And
of course, they did say the thing about, you know, call the wrestling hotline later in the night to see if the title change stands, because it was a substitution. So.
Yes, and it did. It did stand. So then, Brian Pillman defending his title against Johnny B. Badd. And Johnny B. Badd, like, on TV, had been playing, like, almost more of a babyface role, like he was going in that direction. And
when he did something with Steve Austin, didn't he?
Yes, yes. And Mike Atkins, by the way, is the referee's name.
Oh, that's right.
So, you know, Teddy Long, he interfered, and it backfired. And then finally, after all the buildup, Johnny Van turns face after the match after losing, and he nailed Teddy Long with the 2D Fruity left hook.
That's
yes,
right.
That's what it's called. So now it's time for the semi-main event, which is also a great match for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's Sting versus Rick Rude. And it starts off in this great way. This whole angle is great. Where, you know, Paulie Dangerously and Rick Rude are in the ring. You know, they head to the ring, and then they start the count, you know, like, you know, count him out, ref, you know. And he's going on a rant. And Jim Ross knows that the ambulance is pulling up. And he's going on this rant about how much of a bum Sting is and stuff like that. And so Jim Ross is like, keep talking. And so Sting's trying to make it in because he stole the ambulance and drove it back. And Eric Bischoff decided to, oh, okay, well, you know, I'll go in the ambulance with you, I guess. You know, the stolen ambulance. I guess this sounds like a very good idea. So he finally makes it back. And when they met on the ramp after he makes it, because he's hobbling in, and they finally touch and they're punching each other, that crowd about shit their pants. They were so upset.
I thought that was awesome. They did a press slam on him, I think, on the ramp.
Yes, with one leg. He did it with one leg. And the finish of the match, Paulie Dangerously hit him with his big cell phone. One, two, he kicks out. And then
I think Rube clips his knee and then holds it tight.
Yes, yes. Well, Rube was falling back and he clipped his knee. And he didn't mean to.
Oh, yeah. That's right. He had punched him, and then Sting had turned around, and when Rube fell, he fell, like, right into a chop block position on his knee.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was a cool, you know, interesting finish. Rick Rude beat Sting clean. So, you know, now, you know, Rick Rude is going places, and Sting's gonna you know, do what Sting's going to do, you know, for whatever injury or whatever it is that was going on. So, Rick Steiner versus Lex Luger is the main event. And
Rick Steiner against Lex Luger. They built this up, like they had interviewed Steiner a few weeks before, and they were asking Steiner if he could, what do you think about challenging like Lex Luger for the World's Heavyweight title? He said, oh, Lex, he was my buddy, but I used to beat him in the dressing room all the time when we were wrestling back there. You know, just kind of the simple-minded Rick Steiner, the way he was back then, you know. And so then Luger comes out, and they have like this impromptu match in the ring, and I think he hits him with a belly-to-belly,
He gets Mike Atkins or Randy Anderson to come down and pin 1-2-3, like a not real match, and then he just raises his arms because Scotty's injured. Scott Steiner's injured. So Rick Steiner he doesn't have anywhere to go. So just this TV main event of how it worked out, what an awesome match, too.
Mm-hmm.
It was great. And I remember eventually Mr. Hughes runs in. And, you know, Lex Luger, you know, is going after him. Mr. Hughes runs in. So Scott comes out. And with one arm, hits like the best Frankensteiner he ever hit, ever. It was so great.
Yeah.
It was so great. And then eventually, God, I've seen this 1,000 times. What was the finish of that match?
Hey, Luger hit him with the belt.
Oh, yeah.
The ref was distracted by Scott and Mr. Hughes. So Luger hit him in the face with the belt and got the win. But Sanders got their heat back on the Saturday night show because they beat Luger and his shoes in a tag team match.
Yes. It's a great show. It was a great, great, great show.
Yeah.
Oh, God, it was just so amazing. It's so amazing. So I'm going to give everybody kind of an update of what Couture and I are going to be trying to do. Couture has a compilation of some stuff from 1990. I know that's where we left off, was 1990.
Yeah.
And, Couture has some stuff, like a multi-disc set of 1990. And I'm going to watch some of that stuff because, you know, a lot of that stuff I've seen, but not much. So I'm going to get into that and see, you know, what I'm missing. So what we're
going to figure know what's going on when you watch it. And, you know, like, kind of, it's still fresh in your mind when you do a show on it, so it'll be a little bit easier than just reading stuff off the internet.
I'm going to be checking those out, and I'm going to be, you know, doing these shows again. I started, doing the wrestling figure show, which that'll be next Monday night, the wrestling figure show. And then I believe my work schedule is the way it's going to be from now on. So I think Wednesday night is going to be the good night for me, as long as it's still good for Couture. So
that's the best time for me.
All right. So
I'm going to have these DVDs. I'm still finishing them up and stuff like that, and I'll probably send them out to you in a couple of weeks. So.
Yeah, I assumed as much. So what we're going to do the next time we record, which, you know, I think it's going to be next Wednesday, we're going to set it up, I think what we're going to do is we're probably going to go with, you know, we're going to pick two other shows, you know, around this time period. You know, maybe we'll do WWF one or something like that just to change things up. And we'll just talk about that era, what was going on, and then we'll just review a couple of shows and, you know, how everything happened and, maybe if you guys, you know, want to hear a certain topic or something like that, you know, give us a PM on the board or something, or, you know, something.
Yeah.
We'll figure something out for the show for, you know, next time. And then Monday is the I Bought a Rick the Model Martel Toy podcast. We're going to be talking more about the Mattel line and how it came to be, and you know how, you know, all those lines evolved, you know, all that stuff, and maybe we'll get into some, you know, some new stuff of what's going out, and, you know, what's coming, and maybe we'll be taking some phone calls and stuff like that. I'm gonna see about getting a premium account, you know, so those are longer shows, because I don't know how. I'm going to talk to Couture about that, because I don't know how that works. So just make sure you
get the free one. Only gives you 30 minutes, right?
Yes, yes. And then like a 15-minute overrun, which was, you know, a very, very limited amount of time, especially when I'm one of the people talking. So
yeah, because we didn't really get into what we were talking about until like 30 minutes into the show.
Yes, exactly. Oh, I know. That's how it was. You know, we tried cramming so much into that show. So, you know, I don't know how that all works. So, then next, it'll either be next Wednesday or next Thursday or something like that. Whatever works for both of our schedules. When I get my work schedule, I'll figure it out. But we'll post it up on the board for everybody, and I'll have it up on my Facebook too. So, just everybody keep paying attention to this, and you know, we'll work it all out for all of that. And you know, just this type of stuff, like. I mean, right now, I don't know if you guys have heard me. I've yawned a ton. Like, I'm so exhausted because I worked all day. And I knew that this show was coming, and I'm so excited to just talk about stuff like this. Like, I know we keep going on hiatus and, like, you know, things happen and, you know, all that stuff. And it's good to come back. And, like, I'm telling you, like, this show, like, I feel like, we did one yesterday, you know what I mean? Like, it never feels like we're getting back into the swing of it. It always just, like...
The thing with me and Sinbad is we're both... The problem with me and Sinbad is we're both kind of lazy. That's why we...
Exactly.
We go for 6 months without talking to each other or doing a show. Just
exactly, exactly. Yeah, that's what happens. That's what happens. And he has to deal with the constant... weekly dealing with Ed thing, so I wouldn't want to do much more than that anyways. So it's just one of those things. It's one of those things. Like another funny Ed thing is that I wanted to talk about before we left is why does Ed dress the way that he does?
I've never paid attention to the way he dresses. I've never really seen you in person or in pictures.
Oh, God. I cannot wait. Like, this year, everybody, I will be at WrestleMania. I've already got my tickets, all that stuff. I'm going to, you know, New York. I know Ed goes every year, too. Just everybody pay attention. Everybody pay attention to the most legendary outfits in history, what Ed wears, just on a regular basis. It's great stuff. And I know, Ed, you think I'm teasing you, making fun of you. I just want you to know that I am. I am definitely making fun of you for the clothes that you wear. But, you know.
That doesn't mean I don't like you.
Yes, it does not mean I don't like you. I think you're a good guy.
It's no fun to pick on people that you hate.
Yeah. Actually, kind of is.
You want to be a bully, you want to be a star. Right?
Yes, exactly. So, next week should be a lot of fun stuff again. You know, I'm getting used to my work schedule again after, you know, being off for forever. I don't think I'll be as tired next week, hopefully. And so we will be back next week and, you know, handling that stuff. I actually did talk to Scotty Riggs about setting up another interview soon. So we're going to have to work that out soon enough.
He was in hospital too, wasn't he?
Yes. I want to talk to him about that, like... you know, our matching hospital stays of just, you know, how everything, just real fast, the gallbladder thing was, I'll just tell that quick story. Like my wife and I, we went to Orlando, we went to Universal Studios and stuff like that. Like, just having a good time down there. We were in a timeshare or whatever. And we were there for 9 days. And so I took off, you know, 10 days from work, you know, to go to Orlando. So, like, the day before we left, One thing I should point out, actually, is I've been on a strict diet since March. I've lost 90 pounds since March. And so I eat a very strict diet. So I remember my goal was to make it to vacation, and then when I'm on vacation, I won't be on a strict diet. I'll eat whatever, just, you know, because I'm on vacation. That's my treat for working so hard. So, So of course I'm on vacation. I mean, fucking amusement park food and just shit, you know, pizza, all that crap. And so the day before we're about to leave, which was Halloween actually, I woke up in the middle of the night and I felt horrible. I was like, well, what is wrong with my stomach? I just felt horrible. And the worst pain I've ever felt. And so that whole day, I didn't eat anything. I didn't want to do anything. We just went shopping and stuff like that. But I wasn't really, feeling right at all. So the next day we flew home. And I knew when we were at the airport that something was seriously wrong with me. But I didn't want to go to the hospital in Florida because our insurance, at least in my head, I didn't know that our insurance would have covered everything fine because my wife's a nurse. And so, of course, she has great insurance that I'm on. So she's the breadwinner of the family. So I didn't know that. So I was I just got to make sure I get home. So I get home, and I remember I'm at the airport, and I'm thinking, I'm just really tired. I'm just really tired because I hadn't slept, the past couple of nights. I was having, insomnia issues or something. It was because of my stomach was hurting so bad. So I remember I took a piss at the airport and actually looked like Coca-Cola. It was brown almost. And I was like, whoa, I'm just really tired. I must just be really dehydrated because I'm so tired. And I went home and I immediately fell asleep. It was 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I fell asleep. And I'm going back to work the next day. And about midnight, I woke up and just projectile vomiting. I was like, whoa, what is wrong with me? It was the pain that I had before was magnified by 10. And I was like, what the hell is going on with me? Why am I getting so sick? And my wife rushed me to the emergency room, and which is 15 minutes away from here. And I'm throwing up the entire way there. And I could barely walk in, and I just figured I was dehydrated or I was having a gallbladder attack. Because that's what my wife assumed it was, because she's seen this stuff happen at her hospital or whatever. So I just thought, oh, okay, they'll probably just tell me, hey, you're going to have to get your gallbladder removed. And if you just get your gallbladder removed and it's not getting ready to explode or anything like that, it's a pretty simple thing. You can go back to work, in a week or a couple days, you're good to go. Well, the doctor came in after they ran 1,000 tests on me, and was you have pancreatitis. And I was like, what? Pancreatitis? Have you ever heard of that? Pancreatitis?
I've heard of it. I'm not sure what it was.
I had never even heard of it. I didn't know what it was at all. And she's like, yeah, it's 4 times the size it normally is. So, we need to admit you. And I was like, oh, for how long? And they're like, probably a week. And I was like, what the hell? And I had never stayed in the hospital before then. So I was in the hospital for a week trying to get rid of this pancreatitis so it'll shrink up enough so I could go home and rest a little bit so I could get my gallbladder out. So when I finally went home, it was a big long, the whole thing was a big long situation. I talked about it on Facebook, dude, of one day I was, also taking a piss. And this whole story has nothing to do with wrestling, and anybody that turned the show off now, I totally understand that. I swear it's a good story. I was taking a piss, and I was like, oh, what the hell? On top of all the pancreatitis and being in the worst pain ever, there was a drainage in my body that made fucking one of my balls 3 times the size it normally is. Which was the most painful thing ever. It was more painful than the other thing. So, now I can't move because my stomach hurts. Or, as you know, anywhere near that area, if there's any remote pain, it's the worst.
Mm-hmm.
So, So, like, of course I freak out, you know, and they, like, they're all, like, you know, everybody's in there freaking looking at my shit. And it's actually at my wife's hospital where she works, on the floor where she works. So, like, they're all looking at this. They're all her friends and stuff. And me being me, I'm just trying to explain to them that, like, hey, ladies, I just want to let you know that, you know, the dick to ball ratio is normally way different than it is right now. Because obviously it's way different than that. So finally it goes down. You know, my pancreas goes down a little bit where after, you know, a week I could go home. So I go home and they schedule my surgery for like 10 days after that or something like that. So I have the surgery. I wake up from the surgery. The same thing happened again with the giant ball. Because of the surgery, it drained again. So, like, not only, like, it felt like my insides were ripped out because of that. That same thing happened. So I couldn't walk, like, or move at all. And because I had the surgery, it actually caused the pancreatitis to flare up again. So what should have been, like, if I would have caught it early enough, like, a simple gallbladder surgery would have been, you know, a week. It ended up being, you know, I ended up missing work for 2 months because you got to think that first 10 days I was on vacation. So that was perfect timing. Like, they're expecting me back the next day, and I'm like, oh, I'm in the hospital. And then I end up, like, another 6 or 7 weeks not coming back. So it was just – so like I said before, that whole time I should have been recording these podcasts. I mean, there's a good portion of the time where I was pretty banged up. But there was a good portion of the time where I was healing and just sitting here where, you know, I might have been really high on painkillers, but, you know, it probably would have made for a pretty wacky show. So that was just, oh, God. So anybody that's ever had that or, you know, I feel bad for you that you have had something like that happen. And if you haven't,
okay, I've had kidney stones before.
Was that painful?
Yes, very painful. I mean, to the point I'm in the emergency room, I'm in, like, one of the rooms in the emergency room, and I'm just screaming and it hurts so bad.
Yeah, because, like, you actually have to piss those out, right?
Yeah, they give you, like, one of these urine strainers that you gotta catch this little jagged stone.
Yeah, I couldn't even imagine that. Because I had kidney stones confused with gallstones. Like, the doctor was telling me, like, oh, yeah, well, you know, you probably had gallstones. Doesn't work because I've had stomach issues for years. I just thought it was because I was a fucking fat fuck. So I just assumed because, like, oh, I ate poorly. Well, when I started, like, losing weight and stuff and I was eating right, like, my stomach issues kind of went away. Like, I didn't really, you know, have problems with it anymore. So I was like, oh, it must have just been my eating. Like, you know, when you have a Big Mac twice a day, you know, you're probably going to have stomach problems. Well, with gallstones, you know, you shit them out. So, like, you know, with a man doing that, like, you don't even realize it. You don't even notice it. But peeing it out is a whole different story and way more painful. That's,
mm-hmm.
See, that seems like way worse than, you know, what I had. But it's, was it only a one-time occurrence?
It was kind of like, well, for 1 month, it was kind of like an on and off thing. It would come up, and, you know, you think you get rid of it, but, you know, like a few days later, it's still there. So you just keep, you know, straining your urine, and at least they gave me the good, you know, the good kind of drugs you get addicted to and, you know, become broke and shit.
Yeah, that's
They gave me some Dilaudid.
Yeah, Dilaudid is what I had at the hospital.
Yeah,
and,
that's a hardcore one right there.
Yeah, Dilaudid is like, I didn't even know what it was. When they first put me, like when I first got there, they put me on morphine and like quite a bit of it. And I looked at my wife and like, I mean, I'll be first to admit, like I had tears in my eyes because I was hurting. So, I mean, it was the worst pain I've ever felt in my life. Like one of my friends, Louis Armstrong is who calls in all the time. Like his mom had the same thing before, but it was worse than childbirth. She thought it was the most painful thing ever. And they put me on morphine. And I was like, it doesn't work. It doesn't help at all. Like I'm still in so much pain. And they're like, oh yeah, well, we'll put you on Dilaudid. And I was like, I've never even heard of that. I've never even heard of that. Like, how is that going to help? And, of course, it helped me immediately. It was like the strongest drug in the history of time. Like, I was just like...
When I finally passed my stone, I still had a good bit of that Dilaudid left. So I said, I'm going to have some fun the next few days. You know?
Is it? I didn't even know that that was like an over-the-counter thing.
Or just like at a pharmacy, you can get it, yeah.
Oh, CEM. That's what I meant, pharmacy. Like, yeah, mine was, when I got out, they ended up giving me Percocet, which was, like, quite a bit of a step down, not that much of a step down, but kind of a step down from Dilaudid, you know. And it actually helped with the pain quite a bit for quite a while. And eventually, like, it just started dying down more and more. But now, being back at work and you know, working all the time, it's by the time I get home, I'm always ready for at least, you know, one pain pill or something because I'm sore because I'm not used to working anymore. So it's kind of a sucky thing to go back to, but it's, you know, it eventually
worked out. The only thing I was frustrated with when I was passing these stones is sitting here on the toilet for God knows how long. I gotta, you know, at least if I'm gonna be here, I'm gonna at least attempt to accomplish something, so I take me like a laxative. At least I'm sitting there doing something then, you know?
I could never imagine anything like that. Like the whole stone thing is just, I don't know. It's just horrible. It's absolutely
when
horrible.
It deals with that part of the body down there, I'd just rather not deal with it.
Yes, exactly. So this turned into by far the most unique episode of Pro Wrestling Flashback ever. The last 20 minutes talking about gallstones, kidney stones, giant balls, and jagged pills coming
out
of
these. I put a warning up in the thread.
Yes. Go ahead and quit listening, you know, if you don't want to hear the story of, you know.
Just like if we were giving out spoilers, stop listening now.
Yeah, stop listening. Like, we get the timestamp, and no, whatever. People will be fine. But yeah, like everybody, we will be back next week, and you know, I'll be doing the two different shows next week. He has a show coming up this Friday, right, with Ed?
I'm pretty sure. I wasn't on this past week. They did it on a Saturday afternoon. But I had to go back to Mississippi and do some stuff. But pretty sure we're going to be having a show this week.
All right, so
I just show up. Sure. I let Ed handle everything. I just call in.
All right. Well, everybody, be sure to listen to that. And Monday will be the I bought a Rick the Model Martel toy podcast, and then some point midweek we'll record another one of these. So
yeah.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. And be sure to go out of your way for seeing those shows. I'm pretty sure some of them are on YouTube. If not, go to, you know, ioffer.com, and I'm sure you can find those for, you know, probably $10 for the both of them. And just, you know, check them out.
Yeah, I bought, like, all the Clash of the Champions for, like $15.
Yeah, they're really, really good shows. And that early era of WCW, it's so great. If you're a wrestling fan at all, just make sure you check that stuff out. So we will be back next week. So thanks, everybody, for listening, and we will talk to you guys later.